In Anchorage, the number of criminal offenses by minors referred to the Department of Juvenile Justice has dropped by nearly half in the past decade for almost every offense type, except severe drug and alcohol offenses. That number has stayed fairly steady. In fact, as a share of the whole, substance abuse cases in Anchorage are up, but the numbers only tell part of the story. Each day this week, Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman and Zachariah Hughes are bringing you voices from behind the statistics in Anchorage, part of a series we're calling The Blind Spot. To start, we'll hear what that number of juvenile drug and alcohol offenses really means.
So to start out, I'm Zachariah.
And I'm Ann.
We got interested in whether there are more or fewer young people in Anchorage who are admitted to DJJ for problems with substance abuse than there used to be. It seemed like a simple thing to find out, especially because the state's Division of Juvenile Justice keeps track of data about what offenses are being committed and where.
And early on, it seemed straightforward. Every type of juvenile crime in Anchorage is dropping, except for crimes related to substance use. Total offenses went from about 3,500 in 2004 to just under 2,000 in 2014. Substance abuse-related crimes have always varied from year to year, but average around 190. Okay, so what does this all actually mean? To find out more, we took a tour of the McLaughlin Youth Facility in Anchorage, which houses about half the juvenile offenders in the state.
So, you know, if in my mind, if I'm thinking of a correctional setting, this is it.
Dennis Weston is the head of McLaughlin. He walks into an open-tiled room lined with jail cells. Each cell boasts a mat on a plastic bed, a steel toilet, and a small window. Weston has seen a lot change since starting as a detention officer in 1992. That includes a huge reduction in the number of juveniles the division handles at any one time. The number peaked in the 90s, when at a given day, McLaughlin would have up to 215 residents on its campus. Now, the Anchorage facility has half that number. That's partially because more moderate offenders are no longer getting sent to facilities.
Many kids who do arrive at McLaughlin are in crisis, and counselors immediately start evaluating whether they're a danger to themselves or others. Most have immediate trauma, behavioral disorders, or side effects from one or more substances, and some have trickier problems. Weston enters a sparsely furnished cell with a breathing machine next to the bed.
Henry came to us. He had serious medical concerns, sleep apnea with aggravating factors. You know, there's also some self-harm concerns, and there was some assaultive concerns. So you had the medical concerns, but you also had the behavioral concerns. But this was a big part of the problem, not getting any rest, not breathing correctly. And you have to monitor that. You have to have a staff sit there with the door open all night to make sure that equipment's being used as it's supposed to be.
So that's detention, which is short-term, 3.5 weeks on average. But McLaughlin also has a treatment wing, where generally kids stay 12 to 14 months. About 70 kids at any one time go through the treatment program, which is a big share of the 100 to 120 juveniles in treatment across the state in a given year. We head to a cottage on the McLaughlin campus where all the young women live. Nicole Charisma oversees the girls' treatment ward.
I would say the girls right now, 75% have intense substance abuse issues where they need to complete the intensive substance abuse group.
Girls make up just a quarter of referrals. The unit in McLaughlin is the only all-female treatment facility in the state. Charisma generally has each girl for a year and a half before they move into a six-month transition phase, preparing to go from an institutional setting back into the community.
So we try to make things as home-like as we can, and that's paired with the trauma-informed care. A lot of these girls have, and most of the youth in the facility have endured a lot of trauma, and so restricting pictures of family or restricting, you know, something like a stuffed animal that would make them feel comfortable or a blanket that their grandma made, we don't feel it's very conducive to treatment.
One of the things we found out at McLaughlin is that by the time kids are entering the DJJ system, most of them have gotten into trouble multiple times. For example, just look at alcohol-related offenses. The most common alcohol-related citation for young people in Anchorage is an MCA, minor consuming alcohol. You don't get referred to DJJ on your first MCA, you go for your third. And not that many MCAs are issued anymore. In 2009, there were just over 400. But by 2013, the last year numbers are available from APD, there were just 76. MCAs have dropped 83%. A department spokesperson says that doesn't mean fewer minors are drinking. Most MCAs are cited when police break up parties, And there's been less of that since investigations into noise complaints were downgraded to a lower response priority. The point is that by the time kids are logged in DJJ's stats in Anchorage for alcohol, they're coping with serious substance abuse issues, sometimes coupled with a lot of other problems, ranging from family issues to homelessness to self-harm.
So we became really interested in the space between the statistics, when young people may be drinking or using drugs, but before a major legal intervention happens. And we found a gap. There's no coordinated effort to track youth who have started getting into trouble and are having a hard time finding help to get clean. All this week, we'll bring you stories of individuals who have found their own routes for dealing with substance abuse, and some solutions different agencies are developing to prevent the problem from happening in the first place. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
And I'm Zachariah Hughes.